Hi folks, aren't you in for a bit of a treat now on this podcast? This is Martin's conversation with Brendan Ogle, where they both share their experiences of cancer. It's a difficult listen at times, but a fantastic insight, and I think a really necessary conversation. I don't want to give the lads too much credit, but it's probably one of the best podcasts received by our members. They have just been recommending it to other people and asking me to lift this paywall to get it out to as many people as possible. So we're doing it now. Do listen to it. Do share it with people who you think may benefit from it. It's we're calling it Two Crocs Sitting in the Sun. That was the name Brendan gave it, and I think it's a lovely touch. To help us keep the podcast going, we need you to join us on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And you get lots of extras for that. You get these podcasts as quickly as they're done. You get them all in one feed, and you don't have to listen to these me pleading at the beginning for your support. And it helps us keep the mics on, ad-free, sponsor-free, and not having to worry about editorial oversight that maybe, you know, some of the bigger, more corporate podcast networks do. All the podcasts are available in one handy RSS feed, so you get them all in one place as quickly as they're done. And it's a fiver, $5.50 a month. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Really helps us keep going. I feel like I should add, just post the recording of this podcast, Martin was admitted to hospital again. So the experiences of cancer and the effects on your body long outlast maybe some of the treatments that are more famous. Get well soon, buddy, and hope to talk to you back on the shack as quickly as you're able for it. Thanks for the support, folks. Talk to you soon.
Hello, and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. Today is a very special podcast. I'm sitting out here in the open air with an old buddy of mine, and we bumped into each other yesterday. And the old buddy is Brendan Ogle. And we decided, two lads with cancer, we've both been through hell with it, so we decided to have a chat so that all the lads might get an understanding of what it's like to be stuck in this situation. Thanks for coming along, Brendan.
Two crocs sitting in the sun, Martin.
Yeah, so what? So what? We might as well. It's a beautiful afternoon. Brendan, I'm going to start with where it started with me. Did you know you had cancer?
No. Last April, myself and Mandy had COVID. It was the Delta variant. So before vaccination and all of that. We had it quite bad. A lot of people had it bad at that time. And I swole up, my glands swole up in my neck and my throat. And as I started to recover after, it was, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, started to feel well, started me walking again and back to work. And my glands on my right-hand side went down, as you would expect, just fighting off the infection. But the glands on the left-hand side appeared to me didn't go down. So I just thought it'd go down, it's taking time. And I met a friend a few weeks later, about 6 weeks later, in town with his wife. And she says, what's wrong with your neck? So I explained about the COVID. She says, that's not COVID. She says, my sister had that. You better get that looked at. It was cancer. I was in the GP that afternoon. I have a great GP in Drumcondra. Lovely man, Dr. Reckie. And very honest man. He brought me in the following morning. It was after being the hacking of the health service had happened.
Yes.
And technically, they weren't allowed to do blood tests in the correct way. There was problems uploading the results and all that. So he took me in at 8 o'clock the next morning. And he did 24 blood tests and recorded them all on paper and posted them all to England. And they came back. The next thing I knew, I was in the Beaumont. Biopsy. And a couple of weeks after, Professor O'Neill met me. Felt great. I was working. I was having a few pints, going to see Dundalk, working away. Went on my own to see Professor O'Neill. Big mistake. And he told me within a couple of minutes, just straight out, really, you have cancer.
That must have been a shock for you, Brandon. I know I never felt unwell. I was walking around with cancer. I had no idea I was walking around with cancer. I went to the doc to have a pull muscle looked at, and I said to him, I have a itchy mole on my backside. And you're embarrassed. You go to the doc. It wasn't something that made me feel sick. I did not feel in any way sick. Just back from holidays, just celebrating my 41st birthday at that stage. It was only a couple of weeks past.
Same age.
That diagnosis?
We're the same age now. We must be 13 years, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm 54 now. Yeah. So the two of us in the same. I didn't even know that, Brendan. I look way better than you for 54. But I didn't know, Brendan, I had cancer. And it comes up a lot that men are very late to go to the doctor and the diagnosis are late. And that's why the prognosis is so bad. And the prognosis for men is really, really, really bad. I mean, compared to women, the prognosis for men with cancer is abysmal. But it's not really that men don't go to the doctor. It's that men don't feel unwell. And there has to be different routes. There's been studies on this. How do you get men to go to the doctor? How do you get them to, look, make it accessible and make them feel unwell once in a while, because we generally don't feel unwell. I'm going to move you on to treatment. And we've talked about this. It comes at you so fast. You have no time to digest, analyze. It's completely reactive. How did you find that?
Well, the first issue I had when Professor O'Neill told me on the day was my beautiful sister Breege had died of cancer a year earlier, brain cancer. And she did a treatment in the Beaumont, where I was getting this news, in the same building. And she stayed with myself and Mandy during her treatment. And I brought her most days, Mandy some days, to the treatment for the radiation. So I knew the centre, I knew the nurses, I knew the radiographers, I knew the setup. And my sister had passed away within 11 months. We were all just, you know. So when Professor O'Neill, he just told me, you know, you've got two carcinomas, they're cancerous, and he gave it a funny name. And I was on my own, as I said, and I went into a kind of a haze. And then I heard surgery, radiography, and chemotherapy immediately. And I said, no, you don't. That's not happening. What do you mean it's not happening? So I told him the story about my sister, and he asked what illness she had. And she was under a different professor, Professor Grogan, who I think you.
Yeah.
And he said, listen, Brendan, this is treatable and it's curable, but we have to act fast. So I said, look, I feel great. I can see them, but I feel great. Helped me that I could see them. You know, what if I get up now and walk out and go back to my office and just do my job, go for my walks, have my pint on the way home and watch me matches, do it. What's going to happen? He says, in 6 months, it'll be in your lungs. And at that stage, we'll be having a different conversation. So that was it. The day itself is a daze, you know. I had asked him to write it down. I'm getting emotional even thinking about it, to be honest.
I get that, Brendan. I remember the day I was told, and I actually got it in a phone call. I had gone and gotten a mole removed. It wasn't the first one I'd had removed, you know, precautionary stuff. I'd had it done 10 years before. And this mole was on my backside. It'd been there all my life. It wasn't something new. It wasn't something, you know, that I was aware of something new. And a dermatologist whipped it off up in Drogheda. And I thought no more of it. I took out the stitches myself, as I had done previously with the last mole I had. It was just, you know, are you going to spend a day trying to go to the hospital to get the stitches out? Just snip them yourself and get rid of them. So I snipped them myself, got rid of them. And then 3 weeks after that mole was removed, I got a phone call on a Friday evening, and it was the dermatologist, and he apologized profusely for ringing me and said he doesn't usually ring people, but I had serious cancer and I had to get into Beaumont for Monday morning. That's how quick it was. For the next 15 months, it was one thing after another, after you never, ever got time to analyze what was happening to you. So unlike you, I said, throw the kitchen sink at it. I had an 11-year-old, I had a 2-year-old, and the idea that I wasn't going to throw everything and anything at it. So they had a treatment called interferon, which is chemotherapy. But what it does is the opposite to chemotherapy. It makes your immune system attack, but it also makes you incredibly ill. And over the course of 9 months, I went from 12 stone, maybe down to 7.5 stone, and ended up in the hospital, getting tube fed. Everybody expected me to die, and I didn't. I pulled through it and came out the other side, and then happened again, and then it happened again. So three times it's come back, and three times I've had to fight it off. And there's no guarantees, but the weight loss, for me as a fella, the weight loss to be, you know, a third, two-thirds the size you were, you know, I'm not tall. You're a big, tall man. You're a big, big bloke, but I can see the weight loss and you're half the guy you were. Does that make you feel, I suppose vulnerable isn't the right word, but less capable?
I don't like the weight loss, I have to say. It's very visible. It's very visible when I'm clothed, and I won't treat you to this, Martin, but I can show you it's even more visible when I'm not. Not a pretty sight. And, you know, once Professor O'Neill gave me that, and once I got over the day itself, and I was straight in, I had the surgery, and then I had 35 sessions of radium, and I had to go into the centre, and I had to lie down. That was the hardest thing, getting fitted for the mask, because where it was, they fit you for a mask, and they pin you down to the bed. And then they call out all these coordinates, and you can't hardly open your eyes because the mask is so tight. And of course, that's when you can't move. They call out the coordinates and they get the machine just right. And then they leave. Be back to you in a few minutes, Brendan. And then, because they can't be in the room when this is happening. And then you're there on your own and the machine is whirring around you. And that's when I had the real problem because, you know, that's where Breach was. And you're on your own. There's no hiding place. There's no one to talk to. You can't move. You can't get up. You can't run. I don't really know how I got through all that, but I had to do it 35 times. And then every Friday, so 5 days a week for 7 weeks, and every Friday I had to get the chemotherapy, and that was intravenous. So that took a few hours. You have to do, you know, to check your bloods, and they tried to get 7 sessions of that into me. They didn't get 7 sessions into me because I got so weak. I collapsed on one occasion and was hospitalized, you know. And then I couldn't eat. The ulcers started. And my throat closed up. Of course, the radiation wipes out everything. It doesn't just hit the tumours. It's a laser. It burns everything in its wake. So smell gone, taste gone, all the tissue in my throat gone, outside of my neck, everything. By the time I was finished, you know, Mandy tells me things now. Well, geez, you know, I used to be on the couch and I had no energy and couldn't move, like sitting like there's not a very pretty sight when she came home from work. And I was 15 and a half stone before it started, which was too heavy for me.
Yeah.
Too many pints. And I lost 4 stone. I haven't really put any back on, maybe half a stone or something. It's fluctuating a bit. I'm still having trouble eating. And I think what happens is you, because you can't eat, of course, you get these magic drinks and you get them into you, and they're not too bad. Just to keep the calorie intake up. And I think what happens then is it becomes almost psychological. You're nearly afraid to eat when you start to improve a bit. And your stomach has shrunk, your appetite has shrunk. You haven't been doing the same amount of stuff. So, you know, you can get through the day lounging around. And, I'm looking at, you know, maybe going back to work soon. Stress is a big issue with this cancer, and they're warning me about that. You know, you're not out of the woods. I got good results in January. You're not out of the woods for a couple of years, and even then, you know, so is any of us ever out of the woods? No. You know, but it's great. And I look at what happened with as I say, Breed, my sister, and you know, I've got a second chance. Stress is a bit of an issue, and I kind of wanted to say a little bit about that, because, and you would have found this, and this is kind of why I'm doing this with you, Martin, because I was absolutely amazed when I got sick at the people who contacted me. A lot of people I knew, some people I didn't know, it were just names on Facebook that, you know, maybe who had been through cancer, men, and in other cases I didn't know they had been through cancer. And an awful lot of them had inspiring stories. And I was, after having the situation with my sister, which wasn't an inspiring story, although she was a very inspiring woman, she passed away. Died, I suppose. You know. So, but the strength that I got from those people, and I'm not going to name them. Some of them might be listening to this. You know, you're one of them yourself. The strength that I got from, and I'm not talking about five or six people now. I'm talking about dozens of people that I've never met, sending me private messages, text messages, emails, Messenger, WhatsApp, with some of them just being there, good luck, thumbs up, fist, you can do this. Some of them with their stories. Some of them with their stories in great detail. Offers of phone calls, cups of coffee. And for me, who had had a bad experience in my family very recently, this was kind of very encouraging. This can be beaten.
I think you're lucky in that, Brendan. And I think you're lucky in that. I know when I got first diagnosed, it was the opposite. I was extremely isolated, extremely lonely, didn't have anybody to talk to. I remember hearing that you had cancer, and I sent you a message straight away. And I said, look, it's a shit sandwich, but, you know, I'm here. If you feel like you need to talk at any, anytime, about anything, just do. And we've kept in touch all along. And, you know, sometimes it's like Brendan will say, I've lost Forrest Allen. Well, at least you're not a fat bastard anymore. You know, it's supportive, but it's boy supportive, you know. And we wanted to talk about this, that there's a notion that men don't talk about cancer. But men do talk about cancer quite a lot to other men about cancer. What's your feelings on it, Brendan?
Well, I think as men, and you know, none of us know what the future holds, Martin. I've kind of decided to put a few things out there at the moment, you know. I sat down in Spain a few weeks ago, and I've had issues with mental health for over 30 years. Not something that I've ever really spoken about. But I sat down in Spain a few weeks ago, and I wrote quite a detailed, we call it a blog, and then I decided last weekend to publish it. Because there's other people out there, and you know, they might say, well, there's that mouthy fucker on the radio. You'd never think he had mental health issues. Well, if he can be on the radio giving guff to employers or whatever it is, whoever he's annoying this week, and he's got mental health issues, then we can do it too. That's why I did it. And what I noticed, got brilliant comments. Lovely comments. They're almost all from women.
Isn't that strange?
And I know the men. I know there's men who are suffering. I know who some of them are. And I know the seniors, they might have just liked it and said nothing. And I just think whether it's cancer or whether it's mental health, I think we as men, you know, there's nothing, you know, to be embarrassed about, to reach out and to say, I'm having an issue here. But whatever it is, and reach out to people who've been through the same issue and take inspiration and help and just talk. And those little messages you sent me, I could be on the couch, I mightn't have eaten for 3 days. And, you know, ulcerization, they call it, you know, your throat being on fire, basically. And the next thing, you get a little text, just thinking about your buddy. That's it. Well, it seems that that's just what you sent a couple of times. Other times you give me guff, you know. But and other people did as well. And I kind of think this is to say to anyone out there who's gone into a hospital this week or gone into a doctor this week who's worried, and who's getting bad news. You know, everybody knows the bad news stories, because we go to the funerals, we lose our friends, we lose our family, we see RIP.ie, we see the sympathies, we see the eulogies. You don't always see the good stories. And at the moment, me and you are good stories.
Yeah.
We've been through shit.
Yeah.
But at the moment, we're good stories. And there'll be people out there that'll get bad news this week. They can be good stories.
And I just came from the Gary Kelly Centre to here. I go, I'm going up to the Gary Kelly Centre for counselling. Now, I've cancer since, 13 years now at this stage, and it's come back 3 times. But nobody tells you about the small print about the after effects of doing chemo and all the drugs and antibiotics. And there are. I'm like, Brendan, now I can't eat. Eating is an utter, utter nightmare. So it wrecks my head. And I go up to the Gary Kelly Center and I'll do 6, 12, whatever sessions of counseling. And I do it to try and keep me on an even keel. I know when my mental health is suffering. I woke up. I mean, the trigger for this counseling was I woke up crying, And I said to myself, you think you're all right? You absolutely think you're all right. And yet you wake up crying. Why are you waking up crying? Because you need mental health. And you need help with your mental health. So I've gotten over any of the stigmas. I mean, I'll walk naked through a hospital now. I'm at that stage where I have no pride about it. Fix my body and then somebody else can fix my mind. And I was glad to see that recently, in the most recent weeks, that psych oncology is coming into the bargain. I've been begging for this for years. It does as much damage to your head as it does to your body. And it really does as much damage. It totally changes you. It changes you. People ask me about this, and I, the way I explain it is cancer, you're a tree. Cancer prunes you all the way down to your core, and you grow back different. And you do grow back different. So I'm not afraid to go and seek some help for my mental health. That said, you still get depressed about it. It is fucking depressing to have cancer. And people, you know, the old adage, oh, you could get hit by a bus tomorrow. You could, but you're not carrying the bus on your shoulders. So you...
There were days I wished I had been hit by the bus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, no, there are days you wish you were dead. And I will say that straight up. Straight, there's days in the last 3 months I wished I was fucking dead. Absolutely, from being so sick and in so much pain. There's only so much of it you can take. And it does really wreck your mental health. Really wreck. But you wrote the piece about mental health and so many people read it and it did resonate. But as you said, the ones who commented on it were generally women. But we know because we talked. I mean, I talk to men with cancer. You talk to men with cancer. We have the same issues. We talk about it. Like you and I can talk about it because we're both in it. Do you think men don't want to listen to other men?
No. I don't. I know from a conversation we had yesterday, did you kind of think that might be the case? Not my case anyway. I just at the thing, yeah, and I won't talk about the chat, but we were at an event yesterday myself, and I bumped into Martin. It was the first event I kind of had been in. I went to the protest outside the Russian embassy a few weeks ago as well. And it was about mental health in the travelling community and the terrible time that the travellers having the victimisation and racism to face. And people were coming up to me and you know, saying nice things, and which was lovely. And this man that, you know, I know a long number of years, came up to me and said that he had seen what I wrote about mental health, thanked me for putting it out there, and then disclosed to me that he had been suffering with mental health issues since he was a teenager. And a man is older than me. We've established it, both me and you are 54 now. And this man has had what he describes as mental health. And you know, he wanted to talk about it. And we had only had a few minutes. We'll talk again. You know, I think we've no problem listening to other men, but there's a barrier in approaching other men. There's a barrier in a man. You asked me about the weight earlier on and vulnerability. As men, we're raised to fight off our feelings of vulnerability as children. You know, if there's a little row in the street or even in your family, stand your ground, stand up for the family, stand up for the street, stand up for the town, whatever it is. And we get that very young. And then as we go old, if we have some trauma, and a lot of us had trauma when we were teenagers, or whenever it happened, whatever happens in your life, we all have trauma, a lot of people have trauma at some stage. And then as we get older, our bodies start to fight us and people get cancer or people get something else. And we find it very hard to let down that guard and say, you know, I'm vulnerable now. I need help, buddy. Is there anything you can say to me? Is there anything I can go to? The Gary Kelly thing is fantastic. It's fantastic. I've had a counsellor, since 2005. Same one. Lovely woman. She's part of my life now. There's nothing she doesn't know about me. No point going to a counsellor and telling them lies, by the way. No. Don't pay the money for that. You might as well get it out there. They won't judge you. And if they do, get a different one.
And it can take time. Like I'm going through sessions in the Gary Kelly trying to get to the core issue. Why do I feel the way I do about cancer, about life, about everything else? About me, mainly. Why do I feel the way I do about me? And what I'm discovering is that I have always looked at my life as in chapters. That chapter's over, that chapter opens. The chapters never really close, and one leaks into the next, and every experience is part of the next experience. So I'm having to learn to uncompartmentalize stuff. And my greatest issue is compartmentalizing stuff, saying there's cancer there, there's human rights works there, you know. But it's all the one. The reason I do what I do, like I did it before I had cancer, but is because I want other people to help other people where I can. And it's not always possible to do so. I think men find it very difficult to abandon the role of protector, provider. And I know we're 54, and there's people way younger than us that have a different experience of this coming through. And it's not, I don't think it's as strong as it used to be that you must fulfill this role. But I certainly think when you get sick, that asking for help, and it was something that came up in counseling with me today. I never used to ask for help. Never, ever. Cancer made me ask for help. But it took maybe 18 months of cancer before I turned around and said, I can't cope. I need help. And to realize that it was okay to ask and it was okay to get help. I suppose, well, fellas, there's kind of a quid pro quo. I do something for you. You do something for me. And sometimes people just help you just for the sake of helping you.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe there is that expectation, but maybe it's if you look at it informally, you know, what's wrong with that? Like I'm sitting there now looking at a few years ahead that 12 months ago I wasn't sure I'd have, and now I'm more hopeful that I'll have them now. And so what am I going to do with them? If I have another chance, what am I going to do with it? I know what I've done in my past life. Do I want to continue to do that? One thing I do want to do is be more open and be more honest about my own experiences and not hold things in so much. You know, I've worked in the left in Ireland. I've kind of half a book written, Martin. I better not be published or no one will talk to me, you know. But I've worked in the left in Ireland now for nearly a long time. And, you know, you have to hold your position and you hold your ground as well. There's a lot of holding goes on there. There's a lot of internal strength required there now. And a tightness. But you learn things. And you learn things from what I've been through. I've lost my mum, two sisters, and I've had cancer in the last 2 years. There's a lot of learning in that. And if there are people, you know, in whatever I do going forward, I kind of just want to, if I get hit by the bus tomorrow, I want to have it out there. Oh yeah, he had mental health issues and this is how he dealt with them. And this is how good they were and how bad they were, and this was his experience, and this is how he dealt with cancer, and this is our values, this is our beliefs. And if we can just engage a little bit more, you know, the world is in such a way now that, you know, people have been split up. There's more communication. Is there hell more communication? There's more, you know, people are being put into their silos, sitting looking at their computers. They're becoming more and more isolated. They might be talking more, but they're talking into silos. And I just think if we can just as men say, talk, be open, have an open conversation with each other about the difficulties you're having in your life and the inspiring things you do. And, you know, you don't have to be a big, brave, macho man the whole time. You can be that and still cry.
Yeah.
You can be a big, tough guy and still be vulnerable. There's no contradictions here.
I think because I'm further down the road, like, this is all pretty fresh. And it is pretty fresh for you. And I think because I'm further down that road, I take time to appreciate things. And I tell Tony all the time, take a couple of minutes. Something happens and you react. And I say, don't react. Enjoy the moment. Appreciate the moment. I mean, I know for me, every time winter comes, I wonder, do I see summer again? I always do. And it's the bus. You're carrying the bus on your back the whole time. I think, will I see summer again? And then when I see the first flowers coming up, I take a minute and I enjoy that. I say, that's lovely to see.
Do you follow football?
No. See, politics is my football. Politics was always my football. I look at politics like you follow football, and I follow it the same way. Like, I wasn't delighted to see Liverpool lose, because if there is a team out there when I was a young fella, it was Liverpool. It was always Liverpool. But I don't have that football speak. I don't know the chance. Ask me aunt about politics and I'll give you, you know, I'll tell you their pedigree.
The reason why I asked you that, I'm a Dundalk, I'm from Dundalk, but I'm a Celtic supporter all my life since the 1970s. And Celtic won 9 titles in a row. And I kind of took them for granted. And then last year, when they were going for 10 in a row, Rangers won. And then I got cancer. And I thought, fuck. I'm gonna die, and Rangers are going to be the fucking champions of Scotland. I know there's things to go through your head, like, and am I ever going to see Celtic beating Rangers again? And, you know, then this year I got through the treatment and I got a good result in January, and we went to New York with the kids. Celtic were playing Rangers on the 4th of February, and I hadn't drank since I got sick, which was 6 or 7 months. And we were in New York and Celtic were playing Rangers. It was in the afternoon. They hadn't beaten them for a couple of years. And Mandy took the girls to Macy's and shopping and things. And I just went to an Irish bar where the Celtic match was on. Famous Irish bar in Glasgow, Jack Dempsey's. And Celtic won 3-0. And I went in to drink 2 pints. I drank 6. And I came in, and my daughter came into it afterwards. Dara, she's 24. She came in and I was incoherent. And then she says, what? You were supposed to drink 2 pints. I said, I didn't know if I'd ever see Celtic beating Rangers again. It's fucking ridiculous, like, you know.
I take
joy out of the joy I got out of that.
I remember watching when I was first, that first year, Lost was on the TV. And I thought, I really want to see the end of Lost. And I really, really want to see the end of Lost. And what, you know, when I was alive to see the end of Lost, and I thought, oh my God, what a bloody disappointment. That was me with box sets finished for no. but this thing about setting goals, I set goals straight away when I was told I was cancer, and I knew how bad it was. I knew, you know, the idea that I'd still be alive now was just not in the picture. But I had a 3-year-old, and I wanted to stay alive long enough to see her make her communion. I had a 12-year-old. I wanted to see her do her leaving cert. And these were like really big, far out targets. You're talking years of targets. And these were where I'd go. But very quickly, when you're getting your scans every 3 months, then my goals changed to 3 months. Every 3 months. And to this day, I don't plan more than 3 months ahead. I don't. I find it impossible to plan more than 3 months ahead. You can have a loose plan beyond 3 months, and even the idea of the scan as the clock that marks the time, it's complete nonsense. You know, if your cancer is going to show up again, you're most probably going to find it when you're in the shower washing yourself. You're not going to find it in a scan, but you make all these things for yourself. You make all these targets and you make all these things that if I get to this point and I get to this point, but I suppose what I've learned over the years is I have no control over the situation. No control over the situation. What happens, happens. I have to roll with the punches. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you can roll with them. Sometimes they knock you clean out. And they do knock you clean out. And I've lost months, weeks and months where you're just not able to face the world. And I think, too, we need to come back to stress. Because I think with men, stress is such a huge issue that we don't realize how big it is until you start getting rid of it out of your life. And then you realize how big it is. I got separated.
Oh, dear. Well, look, I've been told with stress in terms of my specific illness and what a danger it is. And unfortunately, you know, I don't know how to get rid of stress in my life. I'm working on it. Some of my mental health issues probably isn't that good at getting rid of stress out of their lives, but it's very important to do so. And, you know, I suppose I have learned to take a little joy out of the little things. You know, if I'm going for a pint, I went for a pint last night, and if I'm going for a pint, I kind of sit in the car, and I kind of look at the door and I kind of say, I'm going in for a pint now, with my paper under my arm, and wasn't able to do this a year ago. And I gave what Tony says to you, myself, that little couple of minutes. And when I went up to Oriel Park, I wasn't able to go to Oriel Park to see Dundalk for most of last season. And I'm able to go now. So when I go up and I park the car and I walk around the town, go up a little bit early if I can, and have a look and take in the buildings I know, the streets. And I wasn't able to do this a year ago. Looking forward to the summer and, you know, getting out into the countryside and doing a bit of touring. So, yeah, I think the way to relieve stress for me is to just, as Tony says to you, take a minute when something nice happens, when something good happens. Unfortunately, I'm still pretty good at taking minutes when something bad happens.
Yes.
And you know, when you're not eating and you know, there can be trouble sleeping and you're sitting up all night.
Let's just talk a bit about sleeping.
Sleeping's a disaster for me now. I kind of I'll get tired, as you would expect normally, and watch a bit of telly and I might go to bed, but at normal enough time, 11 or 12 o'clock, but then I'll wake up after a couple of hours. When my body has the minimum amount of sleep it needs, I'll wake up maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And that'll be it. And I'll have a book or a couple of books on my bedside locker. I read some self-help books, but I read a lot of political stuff as well and a lot of World War II stuff, so it's not always the... But I'll start reading, hoping that'll knock me out. But basically, I'm sleeping maybe for the last couple of months, maybe 2 or 3 hours a night. And, you know, I feel exhausted all the time. Although I can still walk 7 or 8 miles. Mm-hmm. But I think I walk 7 or 8 miles today, I'll have a great sleep tonight. No, I won't. You know, I might get 3 hours sleep tonight. So there's a lot of sitting awake, pondering, thinking, writing stuff that should never be published. I'm promising people that. It'll never be published. It's just for me. It's therapeutic. Get it all off my chest. You're all in there. And it's all, no, some of it's not nice, but it'll never be published. And that's a way of relieving stress as well for me, writing. Because I do feel when I write it and I read it back off a screen, it's kind of gone. And if I was feeling a bit angry with Martin now, and I wouldn't be, I'm just using it as an example. And I sat down and I wrote that Martin McMahon is such and such and such and such. And I get it all out. And then I sit back and I read that. And does it read well? And is it understandable? And is it linguistically good? And then if it is, and kind of happy with it, then I notice 20 minutes, half an hour later, I don't feel mad at Martin at all. So it's therapeutic.
I've always found that myself. I like writing expunges. It throws it out there. And I'm like you. I don't sleep. You know, and unlike you, I can't go to bed at 11 o'clock at night. I might go up at 2 o'clock in the morning and be awake again at 4:30. And people get emails from me at like 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And they get used to it now. I'm not expecting anybody to answer. It might be a task that I've had to do for a week. You know, and I'll do it at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll say, and you look at your inbox and the email is there at 3:30 and you think, what the fuck is he doing up at 3:30? He's working. It's not. It's just that I can't.
Sharon Gray, General Secretary Knight, love you.
Like,
love you. You're running the union in 6 months.
Well, I know Tony. He looks at Twitter in the morning. He can tell. Well, he was tweeting at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, and so, you know, you don't sleep, and it is. It's the thoughts, it's the what ifs, not even the what ifs, the what may comes. Not even the what ifs. The past is the past, it's the future, you know, and you worry about the future, and you worry about your kids, and you worry about burying yourself. I mean, one of the first things I did was, you have to think about all of those things, and you're lucky. You're in a good relationship. You have a good woman there and she stood by it. But that's not always the case, both for men and for women. Not everybody works on those strokes. Different strokes for different folks. And it can be really, really tough. There isn't a right answer. I discuss this a lot. There's no right way through cancer. There is whatever way gets you through. You can't pray your way through. You can't eat your way out of cancer. You can't diet your way out of cancer. You can do everything right and die. You can do everything wrong and live. So it is really luck of the draw. Now, did I do everything right? No, I did not do everything right. No, I still don't do everything right. Do I eat properly? Do I make sure I get rest? No, I don't. I lived the same life I lived, slower, Sometimes I have to take time off, like this eating thing. And, you know, it's such a nightmare when you can't eat. And when you do eat, you're sick and you end up, every meal is, and you're down to, you're down to one meal a day.
Yeah. It's a trial for the people around you as well.
It is, yeah.
Because going to a restaurant, like when Dara made her confirmation years ago, I brought her to New York as a treat. And I promised Kate, my youngest, when you make yours, Kate, I'll bring you to New York. And when she did, I wasn't in a position to do it. I just wasn't in a position to do it. So she was never there. And then when this happened, the day I finished my treatment, I sat down and I booked flights for the four of us to go to New York.
Excellent.
And I brought them, but we had to go into restaurants. And I was struggling badly, like, you know. So you're trying to, you know, you can't eat. Yeah. You can't get it down. And you're trying to not make other people feel uncomfortable. But if you say, no, I'll sit this one out, and we'll be back at the hotel, people feel uncomfortable. It's hard for the people around you as well. And so, you know, there's a kind of a pressure as well in being aware of that. You're fucking sick. You could be dying. But you have to be aware of other people. But other people's help. You mentioned there praying won't fix it. And, you know, I'm not the most religious person. I'm not a religious person at all. I flirt with atheism, I think, is the way I describe it. I'm probably becoming more spiritual. But it was really consoling to me, the amount of people who said prayers for me, who said novenas for me, who sent me cards. And, you know, I'd get a message and there's a mass being said for you in Turles, or there's a mass being said for you in Kerry. And I used to, you know, me pomposity a few years ago, if somebody said that, I said, I appreciate that so much. It might not be my thing. So little kindnesses like that. And I suppose if people are listening to this, if you know anyone that has... that is sick, that's struggling in any way. It doesn't have to be cancer. It can be anything. You know, never underestimate the value of the little kindness, even if it's something the other person doesn't relate to.
That's right.
That religious stuff. When I remember the day Breed was buried, and it was devastating. And we came out of the church, and people were sympathising, and the priest was there. And I remember the priest saying to me, you know, when this calms down in a few days, you know, if you want to come in and talk to me, you know. Father Derek and Redemptorist and Doc. I said, well, Father, thanks very much. You've been great the last few days, which he had been. And I'm not particularly religious. He says, I never mentioned religion. Mm-hmm. I just said, if you want to come in and talk, come in and talk. And I thought that was wonderful. It was wonderful. So little things like that. You know, older people saying novenas for you, things like that.
I am brave enough to be atheist. You know, and I am brave enough to be atheist, but so many people said masses, prayers, little prayers. They send me little prayers.
Yeah.
My granny, she's dead now, but God rest her, but she prayed me better. I have no doubt about it. She prayed me better, and everything she had, but I envy them the faith. It's not that I dismiss your faith. I envy your faith. I wish I had it. It would make my life easier. But I don't have it, and I'm never going to have it. Last thing for me, Brendan, and this is kind of the time difference. You're very fresh with cancer, an old hand with cancer at this stage. My life changed utterly, utterly. It's unrecognizable from what it was. I'm way poorer, and that's a huge part of having long-term illness. I struggle financially. It's the biggest struggle I have. But otherwise, I have a better life. I'm a happier person. Do you think you'll get to that stage?
I don't know is the honest answer to that. Do I think? I don't know. If you'd told me a year and a half ago this was going to happen to me, I wouldn't have believed you. I felt great. So we don't know. The day, whatever time I've left, anything from a year to 30 or 40 years, as I say, I'm 54, whatever length it is now, I'm determined to be more honest. And that's not me saying I've been dishonest. I don't think I have been. But I'm determined to be more open about who I am and what I want and what my life should look like. The finance, you know, I'm not a wealthy man. You know, I live in a small apartment. I don't own any property. I've got a job. If, you know, I have to go back to work soon. Because I'll have no money if I don't. I met people though going through the same treatment as me. I was lucky this way, going through the same treatment as me, who had no sick pay. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, the workplace. And they were worried. They weren't just having radium therapy and chemotherapy like me. They were worried about, you know, how they're going to pay the bills next week. And at least when I was going through the treatment, I was lucky to have a job where I didn't have that worry. But I do now. You know, I have to go back to work. I'd like not to go back to work. You know when people say to you, if I won the Euro Millions, I'd still want to work. I wouldn't.
On the arse.
Right. Me and you, I don't know where we'd go. We'd go somewhere, Martin.
Mexico.
Yeah. But I think there's a new challenge there now. And I'm trying to get my head around what it is. I think there's a new challenge there to look at the world in a more open way and bring some of the experiences I have down through the years in a new way. And just kind of, you know, I don't know. Well, you know. But I make it. I'm optimistic now.
Good.
I'm optimistic. I wasn't, and I'm not an optimistic person by nature. But I'm probably the most optimistic I've been in my adult life.
That's good.
So, you know, as I said, I lost two sisters, my mother. I've had COVID and I've had cancer. In another sister, my sister Kay, fell down the stairs just in February, the night that Putin invaded Ukraine. And I'm sitting looking at Putin invading Ukraine and I got a message from Leeds. I thought all my bad days are behind me. Because I got the good results the month previously and she was delighted. And then this happened. So given that I've been through all of that, you know, what would the people who aren't here now say to us if they could speak to us? What they'd say to us is, you know, not in a patronising way, you're there, you know, be open and reach out and do something with your life. And I'm optimistic that I'm going to get that chance.
And it doesn't have to be big things, Brandon. It doesn't have to be big things. It can be little things. It can't. You're a big things guy. And you are a big things guy. You do big things. But the stress that comes with all of that comes with a price. And it comes with a price. And I think men really need to get to grips with, we live very stressful lives. And why do we live so very stressful lives? Do they need to be so stressful? Delighted to talk to you, Brandon.
Enjoyed that, Martin. And as I say, somebody said to me, why did you do that with Martin? If you're a man, a woman, a child, you know, I just want people to know that there are, you 13 years.
Yeah.
13 years. And I've been through, not just with the cancer, but with the grief in the last few years. Some heap of shit now. There are good times out there. And you want people just... sometimes hear the bad stories. There's good stories, and we need to talk to them, talk about them, and share them. Thanks, Martin.
Very welcome, Brandon. Look, we're going to leave it there like that. It is a beautiful evening, and we decided to sit out in the open. So if the sound quality isn't great, it's because we're two elfless sitting out in the open, doing a nice podcast, having a chat about stuff that guys don't generally chat about. Brandon, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Martin.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.